Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lavel. For the first time in podcast history, both Rex and I are on vacation, and yet we're still bringing you this post-Open Championship record. Rex, you are still in Ireland with your family. I'm in Amsterdam, actually about to go to the Heineken factory with my wife. How have been your first couple of days after Portrush?
Heineken factory. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning your time, actually. But we drinking that early on vacation? Is that what
happened? It's actually 9 o'clock. I'm a hour ahead of you, 6 hours ahead of the East Coast. We're going at 11. Seems like a proper time to have a pint.
Sure. No, I agree. Yeah, we spent a couple of days going down the west coast of Ireland, and it's been fun. It's gorgeous. Got a chance to play a little bit of golf with my son, Cole. We had a great time. We played Donegal Golf Club. So thank you very much, Lynn. It was a fantastic experience. It's in the middle of a bit of a redo by our colleague, Paul McGinley, but it was a blast. He'd never played links golf before, and we got a proper links golf day, by the way. And it's been funny. You've actually been a little detached. Actually, it was for you, I guess, on Monday in Dublin. The weather here has been awful. The day after the final round of the Open, the little bit of weather that we wanted for the final round finally arrived on Monday.
I got picked up at 6 a.m. on Monday. So again, 12 hours after the conclusion of the final round of the Open. It was about 50 degrees. It was blowing 30, and it was raining sideways. Yeah. I'm not saying that Scottie Scheffler would not have won the Open Championship by 4 shots, but I'm saying it would have been a lot more compelling, a lot more mystery if he did not have absolutely perfect conditions and could just sort of throw it on cruise control for the back nine. Again, Scottie Scheffler is still going to win. We're going to get into this aggregate score of the major championships in 2025, but it was certainly it certainly saddened me to see those sorts of conditions literally 12 hours afterward. I was actually in Dublin for the day, so yeah, it was rainy. The afternoon turned out to be quite nice. I was bopping around downtown Dublin, going to pubs. We went and checked out the Temple Bar, one of the most famous bars in the world. Who's inside? Johnson Wagner, Todd Lewis, and super producer Andrew Bradley, who you folks may remember was on the podcast last year when we asked him his favorite memory of working at Golf Channel. He did not have an answer. Saw those guys, spent a couple hours with them, along with Justin Ware, head of Sirius XM Radio. So we had a great time and then headed over to Amsterdam. Sausage fingers up, please do go ahead.
Weren't they supposed to play golf? Mm-hmm. I thought Johnson and
they got rained out. They got rained out as if Ireland is apparently ill-equipped for rain. It only rained about an inch of rain, which, you know, you and I live in Florida. That's not that much. It absorbs quickly. And then you go out and play. Apparently it was too much. They were unable to play. Something tells me that they still had plenty of fun down in the Guinness, as we did. All right, Rex, we've had a couple of days to digest the Open, reading stories, watching video clips. What sort of stood out to you about the way that the golf world at large has responded to Scottie Scheffler nabbing his fourth career major, second major in 2025?
It's funny. I was just scrolling through just some websites this morning when I got up and was having my coffee. And like one of the ones that stood out was ESPN. And it was Tony Kornheiser, who is a brilliant sports writer. I mean, longtime sports writer, Dean of them, but his segment was he's comparing Scottie Scheffler to Tiger Woods. And I thought to myself that if mainstream media has finally made the turn and started to make that comparison, it seems an apropos time for us to do it. You and I have probably been doing it a little bit longer. You and I have probably been leaning into the idea that he is not Tiger. He's not quite exactly doing Tiger-esque things, but the only comparison is Tiger. I think 2 years ago when those strokes game number with his ball striking just was through the roof. And the only comparison was Tiger Woods. And I think we've finally reached the point that when you talk about just a pure competitive standpoint, yes, it's only Tiger Woods. There have been other players who've gone on runs similar to this in small windows. This window for Scottie now is 3 years and plus in the making. I don't feel like this is a window anymore. I think this is the standard. And I keep going back to the conversation you and I had on Sunday night for the pod following the championship and the idea what stops him, if anything. And you can never really account for injury. You can never really account for changing life. You can never really account for loss of motivation. I don't see any of those things in his future.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting. And you don't really know how good it is until you're able to step back and you sort of see it in hindsight, right? Like it feels like we have statistics that back up that he's doing things that we have not seen since peak Tiger Woods. But I think only after he sort of slows down or, you know, he steps away from the competitive limelight, we'll be like, whoa. Like that run from 2022 to at least 2025 was like absolutely epic in terms of Scottie Scheffler. And I'm sure if we'd done the podcast back in the early 2010s, right, when Roy McIlroy picked off four major championships really quickly. And I'm sure if we'd done the podcast in the mid 2010s, when Jordan Spieth picked off three major championships pretty quickly, or Brooks Koepka in the late 2010s, picking off the major championships that he did, four in a span. Then he picked up, of course, the 2023 PGA Championship to add a fifth. We probably would have been saying similar things. Yeah. I think particularly with Rory, just because of the explosiveness, just because of how dynamic he was as a player, certainly because of his youth, and you're just sort of, you know, projecting ahead, like you could foresee another decade of dominance in the major championships. Didn't turn out that way. But Rory has accomplished basically everything in the game that I think now, when he finishes his career, he'll go down as one of the top 10, 12 players of all time, like an absolutely brilliant career. Scottie does feel differently, though. Still very much in the prime at 29. His skill set, and I think his stability off of the golf course. And that's sort of the thing that stood out to me in reading a lot of the coverage and scrolling through social media, looking at our YouTube comment section. What stands out is just how steady and stable he is. That is really the differentiator, where, you know, he's not getting caught up in results, in status, just wants to be himself. It's such a healthy way to go through life as a professional athlete. It's hard to really even have a player comp from maybe Roger Federer, just with, you know, someone who's not getting caught up in social media. He's got his home life that he obviously cares deeply for, the grace and the poise that he has as a competitor, while also obviously being ferocious. That seems like the best comp, but it does seem like golf writers, sports writers are trying to grasp exactly who it is that we're dealing with in Scottie Scheffler.
And I think the comparison here would be even more so as we get into next year, as we get closer to the U.S. Open, as we get closer to Shinnecock. And I kind of joked on Sunday night that if Scottie is somehow able to pull off the career Grand Slam next year, it's almost going to make what Rory pulled off this year kind of look, it's going to dull it a little bit, because it had been decades since Tiger Woods was the last.
Well, it's different. It's different. I think Rory's was special because it was such a long gap between, and there was a lot of resilience that he needed to show. Scottie's would be like, whoa, like, yes, we have not seen someone do that since Tiger in that span, which I think is special in its own right.
And you and I, neither one of us are betting people. I think we've made that perfectly clear on this podcast. Please don't take any of our picks or any of our hot takes as betting advice, because we're not good at it. We don't understand it. But I was wandering around the streets of Galway, where we were last night after dinner, and my son and I went into a betting house. I wanted to show him kind of what you can do when you go in here. And one of the bets was for a career Grand Slam next year. And it led to a longer conversation about there's no way he pulls that off. And my response was, well, yeah, I mean, very easily. Shinnecock sets up as well as any other golf course for Scottie Scheffler. His particular brand of golf doesn't particularly need a certain type of golf course. This isn't someone who only plays well at Wimbledon. This is someone who plays well pretty much anywhere. And the Open Championship is always going to be the hardest of the four. I believe it's the hardest of the four for any player, simply because of the uncertainty and the vagaries of trying to win on links golf with different conditions and different bounces, and you never know what to expect year in and year out. He's got that one out of the way. I would say the U.S. Open is pretty straightforward for him. If he drives the ball well and he puts it halfway decently, I think he would probably be the favorite going into Shinnecock next year, barring some sort of bizarre pasta accident.
I mean, Scottie Scheffler is going to be the favorite to win every single tournament that he tees it up as long as he continues this sort of form. Thought it was also an interesting stat, Rex. The final round of the 2026 U.S. Open will fall on Scottie Scheffler's 30th birthday. So keep that in mind if you're forecasting ahead. I love these things that you can do at the end of the major championship season. And obviously you need to make the cut in all four major championships to be on this list. But thanks to our friend at Golf Digest to having this cute little graphic. This just shows, Rex, how much better Scottie Scheffler is than everybody else. And all the live bots go, you know, let's see what it's really like, you know, when all of the best players are playing together. Okay, what happens four times a year? It happens in the major championships. Scottie Scheffler, 32 under par. The next best, Roy McIlroy at 11, Xander Schauffele at 10, John Rahm at 6. I'm not sure you can have a better example of, and you used, you sort of rattled off the quotes from some of Scotty's peers on Sunday, league of his own, class of his own. He's the bar. This graphic in particular really tells a story, but I'm curious, as you look at it now, if you're watching along on YouTube, what else sort of stands out to you among the players who, again, made the cut in all four major championships? These are their aggregate scores.
We had a similar graphic on Sunday night during the live from, and actually I think Paul McGinley got a little surprised by it, because when he started sort of adding it up, and you're right, for him to be double over number two on that list is pretty amazing when you consider
nearly triple.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, my math is bad on that one. Nearly triple. When you consider that these, you're right, these bring all the players together, players included, and you would anticipate that it wouldn't be this way because he simply didn't start the season as Scottie Scheffler, to put it quite frankly. The injury set him back. He wasn't playing his best golf, certainly coming out of the West Coast. Didn't play a lot on the West Coast. Did he play at all on the West Coast? But then going into
Pebble was his first start of 2025. Yeah.
And he really wasn't in form going through the Players' Championship. And so it's pretty amazing to see how quickly he turned the switch. And I'll go back to the conversation we had about Brooks Koepka just a few years ago. And it was big game Brooks. And he, you know, the comments that he would make about, oh, it's easier to win major championships. I don't think Scotty is ever going to utter a sentence like that, but it certainly feels like that the last few years, because it separates the absolute best players in the game, which I think that list is a really good indication of who the absolute best players of the game are, and players who can play well on certain golf courses, players who can play well on certain weeks, but they're not going to be dominant. They're not going to be world-class players. This is an indication of not only is he playing well in the best and biggest events, but he's doing it against the deepest fields.
Yeah, and you certainly see some names on here who have popped out in 2025, right? Like J.J. Spahn, the U.S. Open champion, playing well in all four major championships. Harris English, who with his runner-up finish, his second runner-up finish, again, a completely disparate track than Quail Hollow for the PGA Championship, his second runner-up finish of the year. Like, just a great year in the major championships. Now a lock for that U.S. Ryder Cup team. I actually was really surprised to see Xander Schauffele's name up there. And this is by any real measure been a lost season for Xander Schauffele. Two major championships in 2024. Has the rib issue that essentially knocks him out for 2 months, has not won a golf tournament, is still sort of on that bubble to make it to the BMW Championship and to sort of secure his spot among the top 50 and get to the signature events. There's obviously a loophole with his world ranking. But look at that, Rex. Third among the players who made the cut in all four major championships. Had three top 12 finishes. Had the Masters, had the U.S. Open, and of course had the Open Championship as well. I'm still really bullish about Xander Schauffele. I know he's had a little bit of a swing issue. I know he's been uncomfortable. I know he has sort of bemoaned the fact that he hasn't quite gotten right as we sit here now at the end of July. I thought that Xander Schauffele could have made a serious push for player of the year in 2025. I'll remain bullish just because of the completeness of his game heading into next year as well. I'm still a huge fan of X.
Yeah, it might be 2026 at this point. Let's go ahead and just sign it off and give Scotty the Player of the Year trophy right now and move on. It would have been a fun conversation had he not done what he ended up doing at Port Rush. Xander is a bit of a shock to me, only because I wish I would have had this graphic to show him over the last 2 weeks, because at the Scottish Open.
Just a little grumpy.
Yeah, at the Scottish Open, he was downright grumpy, not towards me or the media or anyone. He was clearly just grumpy about his game. He was aggravated, and it wasn't so much about his swing. If you look at his ball striking numbers, certainly starting 2 weeks ago, it's a tiny window here, that it was as good as anyone else, not named Scottie Scheffler. It was plenty good enough to win. It was his putting that aggravated him. And I could see why, because if you look at Xander throughout his career, the one constant has been he's always been among the game's best putters, and that simply wasn't there. He lost strokes to the field at the Scottish Open. That seemed to take a bit of a turn last week at the Open Championship, and by the time I think we got to Sunday, I interviewed him on his way off property. He had a little bit more pep in his step. Keep in mind that he has to play well coming down the stretch. He's currently, I think, right on that top 50 bubble, and that's going to be crucial for him going forward. But I think he's looking at Memphis as, look, this is a winner-take-all in my mind. If I get through Memphis, that means that next year is locked up. So he's in a good spot. You also have the world ranking that he has, so he would be in the top 30. He doesn't necessarily have to worry about the signature events. But yeah, that one's fascinating to me, because if you ask Xander really up until Sunday over the last 2 weeks, he would tell you his season has been awful and he hasn't been happy. He's been searching for answers, but that's a really good indication of how consistent he is in the events that matter.
Even Xander Shoffley, obviously, he's still going to be in the signature events in 2026. He has made, though, the Tour Championship each and every year that he has been on the PGA Tour. Right now, on the outside looking in, I believe he's 40th in the FedEx Cup standings. That's something to watch over the next couple of weeks because his record at Eastlake is phenomenal. One of the best besides Roy McIlroy. By the time he gets to Eastlake, and now that's a winner-take-all event, like it wouldn't surprise me if Xander Shoffley makes a push and actually becomes the FedEx Cup champion in a year that I think he would describe as pretty disappointing. You see two LIV players, Rex, on that list. John Rahm, 6 under par. What is that? 26 shots behind Scottie Scheffler in terms of aggregate score. Terrell Hatton as well, just under par over his four major championships. Both of those players are going to be on the European Ryder Cup team. It wasn't quite as stark as the feeling that I had after Troon last year, because when you think about it, in a non-Ryder Cup year, that is the last time you're going to see a Rahm, a Hatton, a Bryson, a Brooks, a DJ, a Phil. That's the last time you're going to see them on a really big stage until Augusta. And that feeling sort of hit me. I know it's different this year. We're going to see Rahm, we're going to see Hatton, we're going to see Bryson on the Ryder Cup teams, on their respective Ryder Cup teams at Bethpage in September. But it is a little, I don't know, it's just a little unfulfilling. It's a little unsatisfying knowing that the best players in the world, all of the best players in the world, aren't going to be getting together for a very long time.
Well, I think this is why the survey that the PGA Tour did late last year into this year. I mean, the one thing that said time and time again by the fans was they want to see the best players back competing against each other more often. That's just code for we're tired of hearing about LIV Golf versus PGA Tour. I think it would be much better for everyone involved if they came up with some sort of solution. That doesn't seem to be anywhere close. That doesn't even seem to be a consideration at that point. I will say, and this came up last year at the Olympics going into the final round, it was Doug Ferguson, the AP golf writer, who sort of mentioned to me going into the final round of the men's competition, John Rahm commanding lead. His point was, this is the most consequential round of the year for John, for that reason that you just pointed out. This will be the last time that he is in front of, let's call it, the mainstream audience. I'm not going to get into who watches LIV, who doesn't watch LIV. Is it a good product? Is it not a good product? Fact of the matter is, I think most players on that tour understand that week in and week out, they don't get the eyeballs. They don't get the attention. I think the numbers are pretty clear on what viewership is for LIV Golf events. So going into that final round, there was a level of pressure that John Rahm probably doesn't feel normally. And I would actually equate it to this year, and I think I did it recently, where you make the argument that John Rahm or any of the LIV players now feel a level of pressure that they didn't feel before, because they know the four majors are their four chances to shine on the biggest stages. And you can make the argument that's the case for every player in professional golf. But the difference is you have the Players' Championship, you have signature events. Those still get attention that LIV Golf events do not get. And so I can see if you're a player like a John Rahm or a Bryson DeChambeau going into the majors, you know that this is going to be my last chance. This year will be interesting. As you pointed out, the Ryder Cup provides a second level of here's your chance to perform on that stage. But I think it actually is a detriment to many of the LIV players that they spend a lot of time thinking about it. Our colleague Tom DeAngelo, who works for the Palm Beach Post, had a really good story yesterday just about Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, going back to the PGA Championship at Bethpage essentially 6 years ago, and pointing out that those two guys went head-to-head, and they were 1 and 2 in the world, and they work off royalty. And both of them have essentially fallen off the map, at least when it comes to the major championships. I think it's a good testament to what can happen to a world-class player. We just had a really long conversation about Scottie Scheffler. I don't see him doing that. I don't see Scottie going down a similar road to that. But it is pretty precarious when you consider that just 6 years ago, those two were the kings of the hill.
I mean, how about Cam Smith? You could have made an argument that in 2022, Cam Smith was the best player in the world. In fact, I'm pretty sure that I voted for him for GWO Player of the Year in 2022. The Open Championship win that he had at St. Andrews was one of 5 wins worldwide that season. Has not virtually done anything. I know he's picked up a couple wins on LIV, but in the major championships in particular, been a complete non-factor. That was highlighted again in 2025. A couple of the other standouts, whether it's Joaquin Niemann, who's leading that race. He backdoored a top 10 finish in the PGA Championship. That was the only highlight of his entire major championship season. Was not competitive at Quail Hollow. Just, in fact, finished up inside the top 10 there. Brooks Koepka missed the cut in the major championships in 3 of the 4 a complete non-factor as well. It's going to be a long time for those folks until they get to Augusta, plenty to chew on and plenty to stew with. All right, we're going to have plenty more Rex on the Sunday edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab, the made-for-TV 52-minute edition. So much they're going to be breakdown. The 3M Open, sort of the penultimate event of the regular season. We're going to be looking at the FedEx Cup race, who needs to do what heading into the season finale at the Wyndham Championship. The aforementioned LIV Circuit is playing its third event in a row in England. We'll break that down. Also looking ahead to their quote-unquote playoffs, three in a row that's going to be going up against the FedEx Cup playoffs. Also, you and I, we got plenty of days to think. Now think about this. We're going to be handing out major grades for the 2025 major championship season. Something tells me, though, Rex, we're going to be giving Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy an A. We're going to probably have to get creative with a couple of other players. So plenty more to look at on Sunday. If you guys have a question that wants to appear on the show, you guys know the drill. Hit us up in the comment section on the YouTube page. All right. In the meantime, NBCSports.com/golf, a.k.a. golfchannel.com. For plenty of more news, notes, and nuggets. Talk to you later on Sunday afternoon. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys in a couple of days.
11 a.m. I'm